Welcome to the Dirty Inning.
Hello.
Grand Central Station of Philly's history bullshit. This is where pasts and futures intersect, and Trev and I sit on a bench here in the atrium and laugh at people who were better athletes than us for making mistakes occasionally.
I really like the I like the new thing in Twitter of kind of like middling athletes getting angry at people for saying they're like, you know, making fun of them, like Aubrey Huff. Like, just like guys who never were that good, and you're just like, oh, I can make fun of them now, and they just get real mad at you and dog you for not being good at baseball.
I think we both know what Aubrey Huff is an example of, and it's not a simple middling baseball player that he is.
Sure, of course. I mean, there's other stuff going on there.
I am Justin Clue of FanGraphs and Baseball Prospectus,
and I'm Lenny Dykstra.
Before this intro gets away from us, that is Dr. Trevor Strunk. We do this podcast, The Dirty Inning, on the most obscure, stupidest, funniest, weirdest innings in Phillies history. But sometimes we do what we're going to do today, and that's just pick a Phillies history topic and just talk about it.
Nice.
it's kind of an inning slant. I tried to involve the inning component a little bit, but mostly we're just going to talk about something that I wanted to talk about. And, you know, that's just the kind of year, the point in the year that we are in right now. I mean, Trev, you were saying before we recorded, like, this is a very, you know, people say it's a very exciting time, you know, a week before pitchers and catchers report. I got to tell you, I don't think there's a less interesting time in the baseball calendar.
I hate when pitchers and catchers report. It is the worst. All you get are the truck tweets and minor league signings that aren't good.
I was going to say, are you a truck day guy?
No.
Me neither.
I don't like the truck.
Now, the thing is, I do, like, I'm into it as an idea. If it wasn't happening and someone was like, we're going to try, like, us in the baseball circle are going to try to turn truck day into, like, a holiday for us, where all the trucks carrying all the equipment gets sent out, and there's all these blog posts about, like, this many bats and this many thousands of baseballs, and it'll be, like, a fun little thing. Like, it's in spirit. That's a great idea. But as people who are, you know, basically gremlins at this point, just waiting for baseball so we can talk about it. We're just kind of hiding in the bushes, like, get started playing already. And
I can remember the days where, like, I would look at those like ready-made websites that were like, you know, is it spring training yet? And I'd be like, oh, 48 days until spring training, can't wait. And then when it gets to spring training, it's like, oh, it's like, now it's like 3 months until anything happens. That's cool.
A part of this year that I really like is when, there's nothing to report for the Phillies. There's definitely nothing to report. They've been, you know, very, very quiet on the acquisition front, other than, like you said, minor league deals for whatever. I like the scheduled birthday tweets for relievers. You don't even, like, happy birthday, Austin Davis, from the Phillies Twitter account. And you're just like, boy, I wish
suffering right now.
Wish that was a tweet about signing Chris Bryant, but I guess happy birthday, Austin, I guess.
Like, wonder if he'll be on the team. Happy birthday to the organizational second baseman playing at the Blue Claws this year. Hope it's a good one.
Yeah. So, in that vein, because there wasn't a whole lot going on in Philly's world anyway, across baseball, there's actually very much going on. And I will say that, if you focus just on the Phillies, there hasn't been, you know, this isn't a very lively time of year. But across baseball, this has actually been a very active offseason, especially compared to last year. So no complaints there. Other than the main complaint being the thing that we talk about is that baseball is broken and sucks.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, the only thing, I was thinking that too, like, the only thing there is to talk about is, like, looking at the Mookie Betts trade and being like, if anyone defends this stupid, stupid trade, they are morons.
Like, and now it might fall apart. Like, now everyone's, the national
so good
writers
because of, like, the one guy who's like, oh, I'm sick, I guess I can only be a reliever.
I think that the Red Sox were like, everyone's owning us. They're owning us for this. And so they suddenly called the Twins and they were like, I don't like how this guy's finger looks on his x-ray from his physical. So the deal's off now. Deal's off. You won't be, if this falls through, you will not be able to convince me that it wasn't because the Red Sox got embarrassed.
Can you imagine Mookie Betts playing for this, David Price playing for this team this year if the deal falls through. Oh, sorry, guys. Like, we actually thought you were, like, really, really, like, not worth keeping. But I guess we have to. Hope you play hard for us.
I'd be very interested in the reaction to the water carriers for ownership crowd that are just like, no, it's a good move. We're saving. Look how far we are under the threshold. They'll just, awesome.
It'll be like really somber posts, like lamenting the loss of financial flexibility.
Yeah. Red Sox signed a generational talent or get a generational talent back for a season. And I couldn't be more miserable.
I love like how much people have gone from, like, because I remember when Cliff Lee was traded, there was like, and I was too, like, it sucked. And so everyone had to talk themselves into Tyson Gillies and Philippe Beaumont and JC Romero. And it's like, all right, fine. Like, that's kind of what you do. Like, you talk yourself, or Ramirez, sorry. You talk yourself into that stuff because your team did something stupid and you have to talk yourself into it. I like how it's gone from that to people like, very, very clear-eyed telling you that Alex Verdugo is better than one season of Mookie Betts. I feel like if Alex Verdugo puts up 10 wins above replacement his whole career, that will be considered a prospect win.
I love being told that. That is that's so a fun, funny. Fun thing to be told.
Yeah, it's especially fun if you are a Red Sox fan, I'm sure. Many of whom seem very angry.
Yeah, collectively, it's refreshingly angry, I suppose.
It would be like if the Phillies traded Aaron Nolan, they were like, well, he's probably not going to really sign a long-term deal. But we got this guy who looks like he might be a speedy middle infielder.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Cliff Lee trade because Liz Rocher and I were trying to talk about a comparable Phillies situation to this in Boston. And she was talking about, like, this is like if they traded Cole Hamels after 2012. And we were just trying to work it out. And I was like, oh, wait, is the Cliff Lee trade after 2009? Is that not a one-to-one on this? Probably not completely, but it's definitely the closest, most recent thing to this that the Phillies could compare to.
It's a rough trade, but like I want to say the Cliff Lee trade is way better.
And you're right. They did get Roy Halladay additionally in a separate deal.
That's why I'd say it, where it's like the reason – and no one believed the rationale, and everyone thought it was silly. And it was definitely about cost savings. But the cost savings also netted you a – like. An equally good, if not better, pitcher for a long-term deal. And it's like, well, at least the Phillies got Roy Halladay as opposed to the Red Sox, who would then lose Mookie Betts and get no one excited. Cool. All right.
This is why I watch. To watch a spreadsheet. I hope they hand out spreadsheets instead of programs on opening day.
Yeah. I really hope that someone from a website somewhere is willing to tell me why I'm such a fool for wanting Mookie Betts at $420 million instead of $300 million.
A four-time All-Star and American League MVP in center field? Nice strategy, you idiot.
Oh, looks like your team's going to be losing the war wars.
You utter moron. Let's go. Let's go.
I love this sport so much that I actually, there was a, I didn't get to read it, but I think if it was it Mark who was putting, it was either Mark or Craig from Baseball Prospectus was Mark Normandin or Craig Goldstein was talking about this article that was written today. And I didn't recognize the author, but it sounded really good about how like trash can gate was simply like the logical extension of stats analysis. And I love that. And I want to read it. And it is such a good and important idea. Cause like, yeah, like if you're constantly looking for an edge, why wouldn't you then just say like, well, cheating's free, boss.
And that's the state of the sport now, really.
Yep. And that's right.
That's the sport. That's the sport we talk about. I mean, this stuff kind of just, it's not that it whizzed right on by or anything. It's just kind of like, yeah, it's been absorbed as the way these things typically are as they come by generationally. These sport-wide disasters.
I wish there was someone smarter pushing back against some of Sabermetrics as opposed to, like, Joe Morgan.
I mean, like, it'll happen. There will be...
There are some smart people pushing back against it now, but it's just like, this could have all been stopped if someone was like, well, that's all well and good, but...
Have you considered what would happen if you didn't just throw a calculator at each of these prospects?
This Moneyball book's fine, but, you know, these people are humans. Like, we should probably...
Oh my God, this copy's missing a page. I based our entire franchise's future, and I missed an entire section of this
book.
It's
just two pages stuck together, and you cut it open with a knife, and it's just Michael Lewis saying, like, all of this should be taken with a severe grain of salt.
Don't forget to use this in addition to, you know, the eye test. Well, we're talking about this offseason and the addition of little pieces, minor league deals and everything like that. And the Phillies aren't the only team doing that, obviously. The Giants are doing that. The Giants are going to be a last place team this year. They are going to be pretty much unwatchable, I would say, for, you know, at least the next year or two. You know, it's the ebb and flow of the sport. But in doing so, you know, they're signing a lot of... lottery tickets. They're signing a lot of warm bodies, quad A guys, like, you know, that's their brand at the moment. And one person who received a minor league deal from the San Francisco Giants this winter goes by the name of Darren Ruff.
Trev, really? I didn't realize. I didn't see that.
Darren Ruff.
He's back.
Is back.
Did he didn't hit very well in the KBO. He like did okay, right?
Au contraire, my friend.
Oh, he was good? I lost track of him completely.
He was the monster of the Korean baseball scene.
Oh, good.
He stumbled at first.
That must have been where I was at, because I like saw his slash line early on in his career, and I was like, ooh.
He stumbled at first, but he pulled it together, and he became and that's a hitter's league over there, too, so he really excelled. I think that was a really great place for him, and we'll get into his time in the KBO
I'm so happy for him.
But yeah, he is. He's back stateside, signed a minor league deal with the San Francisco Giants, and seeing his name in the headlines made me, I wanted to dive into the Darren Ruff story and just talk about his career. He's 33 years old now, and this is a kid who, you know, when he came up for the Phillies, he probably wasn't even, it's probably not fair to call him a kid, you know, the former Phillies minor league slugger, and I wrote major league disappointment. Feels a little mean, so I'm going to say minor league slugger and major league, well, we say disappointment.
Not Don Brown.
Not like he's disappointed us. You know, on a personal level, disappointing in that this is the guy chasing the Eastern League Triple Crown during a dud of a season, and he was brought up and he did okay, and then he just never really became anything. It happens a lot, but that was a hell of a stage set for him initially.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by that. And he's getting
kind of a feel. Like, we talked about Rhys Hoskins last time and how like we're hoping he doesn't disappoint. And there's a Rhys Hoskins had higher highs than Darren Ruff, don't get me wrong, but like there's a feel of Rhys Hoskins here, right? Where it's like, that's could be where this all ends up. And that's Darren Ruff's a rough story for that.
Definitely right about that. Yeah. I don't think, you know, it's easier to get on board with Rhys, but cause you know, he's been here and he's done well here. Obviously he struggled a lot at the end of last season, and there's more questions right now that we want to see answered in 2020. But in the case of Rhys Hoskins, it was a lot of the same thing. It made it hard to trust. Rhys Hoskins and Dylan Cousins both were like bashing and mashing at AAA. And you were like, that's awesome. Let's see the major league level. In the back of your head thinking like, you know.
We've
seen this before. Yeah. Let's see it.
And in fairness, Dylan Cousins not
right.
Not considered the future of the Philadelphia Phillies at this
right.
point.
Exactly. You know, some guys they know how to hit AAA hitting and they do it awesome, and it's you know, seeing clips up from Lehigh Valley on a night when the Phillies lost of like Dylan Cousins just going ham on a high fastball. It's
very
awesome.
Fun. Yeah.
It's awesome. And that's kind of the way Darren Ruff was. He's a AAA stud who never found a way to truly produce on the big league level, at least not with the output indicated by his minor league career. He's listed as a first baseman and an outfielder, if you'll remember.
Trev. That is generous.
All because the Phillies tried to wedge him into a corner outfield role while still having Ryan Howard. So I wanted to ask you off the bat here before we dive too far in, because it crossed my mind while I was looking into this. How much do you think Ryan Howard's extension wound up impacting Darren Ruff's career? Like, his talent level was what it was, but Howard was around for obviously a lot longer than any sane person would have kept him here.
I guess probably, like, I always have a hard time figuring out just how much just how much people are affected by position switches like that, where like you have to suddenly, you know, take on outfield role and like that you're not good at it. And I mean, because Darren Ruff was not a good outfielder. I'm not trying to be mean. Like he wasn't, he didn't look comfortable in the outfield. And like, I always wonder like, okay, so like how much does that actually impact those players? And I have to like, I have to assume it impacts them a lot more than I think it does. So I don't know. Like I can't imagine it impacted him that much initially, but the fact that he had to become like a part-time player, that can't have helped. And he probably just stagnated a little bit. So yeah, no, I think, you know, I'm talking myself into quite a bit.
Yeah. Darren Ruff is a lot. It's hard to root for somebody when they're failing in such a prolonged way and part of a blur of terrible Phillies baseball. You know, but looking back, he's such a good person. Yeah. Everybody I've talked to interacts with him is like, oh, he's a nice guy. And the kind of player he was is like the most entertaining kind. Like people love sluggers, and that's just what he was. He was the Phillies Pete Alonso who never fully materialized. Mm-hmm. And the Phillies had a Pete Alonso, awesome. That would be awesome. So
yeah, funny. I mean, you absolutely hope for something like that. Like yeah, no, that's why you take chances on people like Darren Ruff or even someone like John Singleton or something like that, where it's like, yeah, you know, it's really cool if this all panned out.
Yep.
I would love that.
Well, funny story. I did an archival news search for mentions of Darren Ruff, and the earliest mention is from 1787 in Scotland.
Okay.
All right. Justin and I don't think that was actually Derek Ruff.
I'm a little worried. Thank you, about Trev. This. Yeah.
So a bunch of pirates tried to take a ship that. Now, keep in mind, I'm reading this through whatever you would call. What is the language that this old timey Scottish language that is somewhat English? A bunch of pirates tried to take a ship that subsequently exploded, near as I could tell.
That's not good.
This story got caught in the search net because the pirates in the story are referred to as daring ruffians. So I think we can only assume that is Darren Ruff's full name or
Darren Ruffian.
Or those are his ancestors or both.
That's his clan.
So that's an awesome tidbit that we're going to just throw in there.
Once again, wish he panned out. that's very cool.
We're going to see how close Darren Ruff came to panning out, where he came from, how well he did while he was there, and what led him away from Philadelphia right after we get back from this break. Thunderclap! The dead heat of Nebraska in summer is frequently broken by the burst of lightning and the cracking of thunder. And here, on a diamond in Elkhorn, Nebraska, stands a high school junior named Darren Ruff, fleeing with the rest of his Omaha Westside High School teammates from the 15-minute storm delay they underwent while pummeling the Bellevue West Thunderbirds in District 2 baseball. Ruff singled that day as part of a campaign that saw the Lincoln Journal Star list him among their Super State Baseball first team in 2004. His stats were listed as he hit .371 with 39 hits and 39 runs scored, 9 doubles, 7 home runs, 34 RBI. He played the infield, and Trevor, he pitched, posting a 3-1 record with a 1.28 ERA.
All those dudes who are really good at baseball in high school are just like casually amazing pitchers too. Mm-hmm. It must be amazing.
What like, a feeling.
Not anything we know about. Nope. That was actually a question that Justin just asked. What a feeling.
It's kind of like how when you know when you're a writer now, you also have to be a podcaster.
Yeah. And some of them are good at it.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
Don't know what that's about.
Wonder who. Well, Ruff did it all back then. The next season, Ruff, a player not known for his speed by the time he reached our purview, would even steal home. Hmm. So with all that talent, he committed to Creighton, where he majored in finance with the goal of one day becoming a successful businessman.
Was that really his goal?
That's what it was written in his profile, yeah.
I can't imagine that was really his goal.
Oh, I mean, I want to. We'll talk about that in a second. He dominated at Creighton and was a monster of the Northwoods Summer League, leading all players at one point with a 371 batting average. I think got as high as 379. He was rooming with Pat Venditti with the same host family because he was a fellow Creighton player. Venditti is, of course, the ambidextrous player or pitcher who
never really panned out.
No, he never really panned out either. But did the Phillies get him at one? They did. At some they got point, him.
Yeah, I was really excited about that.
Yeah, he apparently also went to Creighton, and he got, you know, he always got coverage no matter where he went. So, like, the story I found that in was about Venditti. This guy throws with both hands. It's wild.
You gotta wait on the mound. This is just be the end of baseball.
One hand, two hands.
I loved, the best thing about Pat Venditti was when, like, people would get terrified about, like, what would happen to the rules because of Pat Venditti. That was my favorite thing, when they'd be like, whoa. If this, he could change pitching hands for 20 minutes, and the batter could keep changing stances, and it's just madness.
And like, does it count as a pitching change if he puts the glove on his other hand? Like, what am I supposed to do with my scorebook? Oh God, I set it on fire.
It's like I'm pretty sure Pat Venditti has no interest in doing this. Like, he's a typical Type A baseball guy, like everyone in baseball. He's not gonna like stand on the mound and do some performance art. Everyone was terrified.
What's he's wields such power out there.
He could keep us in our seats all night. We'd be powerless.
My God, we're his prisoner. We're gonna have to kill him. Well, the Phillies didn't have a lot of great draft picks at this time, since they were so good and they were making enough deals that high picks just weren't on the board. In fact, in 2009, the year Darren Ruff was in the draft.
I know who they lost the pick for.
Who was it?
Raul Ibanez.
It was. They lost their pick for Raul Ibanez, and also, yeah, they just kept winning the National League pennant, and you know, doesn't really award you a top draft pick. So
yeah, they didn't stupid.
They didn't. What a bunch of idiots.
They should have
everyone
lost.
Knows the good teams, you know, suck, so they can pick better prospects. That's a very modern baseball take.
We're very cool.
We're so cool. I'm actually doing this podcast while riding a skateboard. Around the block, around
my
where
I live. Seems like a really bad idea. I'm a little worried about you.
Oh, it's very late at night, okay. And I do not live in a good neighborhood.
Oh no.
We'll see how this ends up. So the Phillies didn't pick until number 75 in 2009. And even then, they grabbed a bunch of guys before Darren Ruff. They picked up Josh Zied. They picked up Aaron Altair.
I remember that guy.
Brody Colvin.
Oh, boy.
The previously mentioned John Singleton. All these guys came in 2009, and Darren Ruff slid in at number 617, just a few dozen picks ahead of Mike Fiers for the records. Yeah,
who like is kind of more well known now for being a whistleblower than a pitcher.
Yes. So Ruff was dropped in the outfield, so his history in the outfield is probably more prominent than people realize. He wasn't. Just when the Phillies put him in the outfield, they weren't like, I don't know, maybe put him out there. I mean, they kind of were that. In fact, they exactly were that. But it wasn't without precedent.
Well, it wasn't like with Hoskins, right? Where like when Hoskins was in there, I don't think he had experience in the outfield. I think he really was like a first baseman. And they were like, well, Reese, give it a shot. Like, yeah. Darren Ruff was, he even played outfield in Lehigh Valley, as I recall.
Yeah. I think he wound up doing a little bit everywhere in the outfield. And as he slugged from Lakewood to Clearwater with Jonathan Singleton viewed as the true first baseman of the future, he was somewhat blocked. So he wound up more in the outfield at first at this lower level. So I think the thing to conclude here is that Ruff is a wholesome Nebraska guy. According to a Q&A in the Inquirer in August 2011.
Q&A on.
His parents are a guidance counselor and an elementary school teacher. Huh. He said the person in history he'd like to meet most is Johnny Rogers, a 1972 Heisman winner for Nebraska.
What? You could probably just meet that guy.
His dream dinner guests were his college coach.
You can just have dinner with him.
An old Nebraska football coach who I think was dead.
Probably. Okay, yeah, that's fine.
And his fiance, which I thought
you could just have dinner with.
I thought that was, you know, but that was very sweet.
Come on, man. You wouldn't say your fiance, would you?
I mean, it kind of defeats, this is why I'm laughing, because it defeats the point of the question.
That's the, like, it's the dumbest answer. It's like, well, one person who I really want to talk to and has passed away. All right, well, cool. And then two other people who I can call up any day and have dinner with.
Like, oh, I think he just took cool. it as who are like three of your favorite people.
Like literally something. The question is, we're making a dinner party. Who should I have? It's like, well, my wife should be invited.
Well, that's what I mean. He's just, he's very like, he's so Nebraska. He's so wholesome. He's so nice. Like this profile was really a window into that kind of soul. He worked as an umpire when he was younger and said he liked having the opposite perspective so he could get an appreciation for the job. And when asked about the possibility of being traded when he was a Phillies prospect around that time of year when prospects might be on the move, he didn't say he was anxious or worried, but actually that he was interested and followed the process closely in case he ever worked as a manager or front office personnel someday. Huh. So, yeah, this is a guy very interested in even perspectives. And
very funny, you know, to me to imagine like a baseball player who like doesn't know how the trade deadline works. Like there's all these fans who are just like obsessed with it. You're a baseball player who is literally at the whim of it. And you're like, I better figure out how this thing works.
I think he meant it was more like who was going where and why they were being acquired and what a team was looking for that was that in sense. A particular situation. How did the GM's like, all right, we've traded you to the Reds. And he was just like, interesting. Okay. He's like, let me know if you have any questions. And he's like, cool. And what are trades? Or he's just like, all right, I'll see you tomorrow, Skip. And they're like, no.
I have so many questions.
The next day he's just out there like taking BP and laughing with his teammates. The man's just like, God damn it.
Go away, Darren.
After he put him on a plane the previous night.
Hey, who's this new guy?
Yeah, so he's the kind of guy you really wanted it to work out for. And Ruff was brought up to the Phillies roster in 2012 after a terrifying season in Reading. That was the hope that it was going to work out. So I have selected two standalone moments in Ruff's career to bookend our discussion about him. Two things that only happened once in his MLB career and on the surface indicate maybe why things didn't work out.
Okay.
So our first moment occurs on October 2nd, 2012. Darren Ruff hit a pair of dingers in a 4-2 loss to the Nationals. It was his first and only multi-home run game in his Major League Baseball
career.
Seriously,
the only one? Mm-hmm. That's a little surprising.
The previous day's game against the Nationals, the Phillies had won 2-0, with Ruff knocking in both runs with a two-run triple. A few days prior...
That's a real Nationals killer.
Yeah. It wasn't too hard at this point. Well, oh, wait, no, 2012. Yeah, it was a little harder. Yeah,
a little harder. Well, it's certainly hard for the Phillies.
A few days prior, they'd played another series against Washington to close out the season at Citizens Bank Park. And in Game 3, they'd lost 7-3. In that game, Ruff had knocked in all three of their runs with a bases-loaded double. So at this point, it's fair to say Ruff was kind of the crux of the Phillies' offense, at least.
That was a bad offense. And yeah, I mean, especially... Hunter Pence was having a bad year. Ryan Howard was getting into serious decline.
Hunter Pence had been traded by this point.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, he was having a better year somewhere else. He was having a better year in San Francisco, where he would later go on to win the World Series.
Great story. Fun story. Love that story.
It's a good one. Well, we got Tommy Joseph out of it. Another guy who succeeded, right?
I love prospects. I love them.
Okay, go on.
I love betting on them. I love putting all my hope in them.
I like trading people who can hit at a major league level for someone who might.
I like magic beans. What are they hiding? What's in there? So far, nothing.
Magic.
So far, I'm 0 for about, let's say 60 on magic beans.
You just
got to
keep working at it. Just keep
next time.
You'll get a magic bean someday. That'll grow a big old beanstalk. You know, collect some gold.
Well, Washington had just locked up the NL East for the first time ever, dethroning the Phillies from the seat they'd had atop the division for the last 5 years. This put a crack in Charlie Manuel's facade, and he was already saying the Phillies would return in 2013 and take the division flag back, which I really respect him for, but looking back, it was kind of a dying of the light situation. So it was a time of transition in Philadelphia, With the playoffs having slipped away, fans were readjusting to a world without a postseason. It sucked. What were we supposed to do all October? Go down and drink in the sports complex parking lot without a hat and gloves in the rain like a bunch of psychopaths? Yes. I mean, maybe. Yeah. Sounds pretty cool, actually. We should go do that. Yeah. But without a game to attend, without a World Series to try for, it just seemed to lack purpose. The game had ended. The stadium had shuttered. The five-year party was over. And the only thing to clean up was our feelings.
That's so sad.
Trev, what was your 2012 realization? No postseason. The fun times were over in Philadelphia for the Phillies. Like when did that happen? What happened?
I think it was actually like I can remember being on vacation with Kristen's family, and just like it was at Hilton Head, South Carolina, and like so you know it's nice out there. There was like a pool and stuff, and I was by the pool, and I was updating MLB trade rumors, and I saw that Hunter Pence got traded. And it was not for anything that was exciting. And I was like, this is going to be a while.
Yeah, that's kind of the noise. Huh?
Just like And I remember they made like a brief little push at the end of the year where they were like, they still can mathematically make the playoffs. And then when they didn't, it was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think they still sent out playoff ticket sign-up sheets to their season ticket holders and... For me, it was similar, but it was when Shane Victorino was traded because that was my guy. That was my favorite player in those teams, and he was the first to go.
Yeah, when Shane, I forgot that. Yeah, he was the first to go. That was a rough one, and like just like trying to get myself excited about the Dodgers prospects coming back, and like being like, yeah, you know, I'm not. They get nothing against them. It's fine. Like I'm sure I had a lot of faith in Ethan Martin for whatever reason. But like,
that's okay.
Did you ever? you've been there, but like, it's just it was a sad thing. It was like, this team isn't fun anymore, and they're not good anymore.
Exactly. So where were they supposed to turn to now? The Phillies still had a game or two to play on the road, but nobody was watching.
No.
The time of other sports was upon us, and that would help, sort of, until those teams inevitably also lost. But as baseball fans, what was our guiding light? Did we really believe this team with its aging core and middling farm system was going to come back in 2013 and take down Bryce Harper and the Nationals?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Everyone believed that.
Charlie Manuel. He was like, yeah, that's what's going to happen. They traded Hunter Pence. They traded Shane Victorino. They traded old Joe Blanton. The part of the movie had started in which the supporting cast was being killed off. And soon it would be down to
the trade of Joe Blanton, not one that tears me up, even though he was such a big part of the team. It's okay. It's all right. I was ready to see Joe go. It's fine.
I mean, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, those were the players who you're like, okay, I can stomach this. But soon it would be down to a desperate contingent of survivors from this core.
Yeah.
So we needed something to show us that there would even be a future. And at this moment in time, Darren Ruff was that thing. He hit 38 home runs for the Reading Fightin' Phils at AA with a 1028 OPS in 139 games. He chased the Eastern League Triple Crown, though he didn't win it, and he was named the league's MVP. The Phillies put him on the roster in September, and he got into 12 games and hit 3 home runs, 2 of which came against the Nats on October 2nd.
That's so good.
In doing so, he gave people a future to believe in. Help was on the way. I remember one radio caller kept saying Ruff was the real deal, that he had seen him in person a lot that summer and probably the years prior, and that he was different, that he was special. And yeah, there's like, for every prospect that gets talked about on Philly sports radio, there's probably like 10 callers who are going to call in and be like, this is the real deal. I didn't believe in any of these other guys, but you know, Cody Ashe, he's got it.
Cody Ashe. That's a different.
But, you know, I remember that. The guy was very adamant. A New York Daily News column circulated the internet that suggested the Yankees should trade Curtis Granderson for Darren Ruff.
That would have been nice.
Would have changed things, certainly.
I mean, Curtis Granderson wasn't an elite player in 2012, but he was good.
I mean, but, like, that's a player. Darren Ruff.
You can actually count on him playing for 162 games and providing you something.
I mean, Curtis Granderson was an all-star in 2012.
Was he still? Okay.
He was 31. He just retired. I actually just wrote something about him.
Well, he's
brief time with the Brewers on FanGraphs, but
yeah, his career, his like tail end of the career from like the Marlins years on, seemed like there were a lot of years where it was just like him kind of showing up for 54 games and then like being very good sometimes and kind of disappearing other times. He was good at the Blue Jays, right? In any case, I'm getting off topic.
He was serviceable for the Blue Jays. Yeah, I mean, but that's kind of what we were looking at. And that's kind of like Curtis Grant, if you're, you know, this prospect gets brought up, he kind of came out of nowhere and had this explosive season. And if you're the Phillies and the Yankees are like, we will give you Curtis Granderson for him. I mean, you got to think like, okay, yeah, this kid could be, you know, we're sitting here talking about him being potentially the future. And he was this hopeful moment in a dark time for Phillies fans. But like, that's as a GM, you got to lean towards making that deal, right? Like you've traded two of your starting outfielders this season. And I guess if you're in full on rebuild mode or you think, okay, we're heading towards a rebuild, which the Phillies weren't, they were clinging to that aging core for a while. Like that's what we just, you know, later retroactively, we can see that's what they were doing. So Curtis Granderson was 31 years old. He was an all-star in 2012. However, he only hit 232. With an 811 OPS, so he must have. I don't know. I'm not looking at his splits, but something tells me his second half of his season
wasn't great. Yeah,
yeah. But even so, I mean, yeah, he never came back to being the Curtis Granderson that I think you think of when you say Curtis Granderson. And yeah, he might have. I think he rode some Yankees juice into that All Star game. Looking at his numbers, like he had a solid beginning of the year.
Well, he also he hit a lot of homers in those days, right? That's his later years. That was like extremely homer heavy Granderson. People like voting for that.
That's true. He had 23 home runs before July in 2012. So that makes a lot of sense. But my point being that even if it's Curtis Granderson and we're in 2012 and we're pointing out like how he's not as valuable as he used to be, he's still a player of value, and trading a prospect who kind of blossomed out of nowhere for him, that's kind of a move, right? Like, is that risky?
It feels risky. Like, oh, it feels especially risky, I think, in 2012. When like you're kind of thinking, well, like I've made so many deals, I've mortgaged this team, and now I'm going to trade like the prospect everyone thinks is going to be like the one guy who's going to help us. It feels like if you mess this up, you lose your job. But I also think you were going to lose your job anyway if you're Ruben Amaro. So like, you probably should have just gone for it. If it was,
why not
if it was
burn
really
this
there,
place to the ground?
Yeah, I would have. I mean, that was when he was at his best. When he doubted himself, it was really a problem. But like, yeah, I think it might be a tough trade to do. Just like if you really thought Darren Ruff might be good, what we know now, obviously it's easy. But like, yeah, I wish they would have. That would have been good.
But you know, I also don't know what state Curtis Granderson's contract was in at that point. So there were a lot of stuff going on, but this is why I think Ruff stands out a little bit from the blur of failed prospects and nothing acquisitions that make up this era of Phillies baseball from 2012 to 2017. For a minute, he was the savior. He was the next big thing. And the narrative made sense. At the end of an era of dominance, here was this beefy Omaha-born minor leaguer with a big bat from nowhere who was going to step up and usher in the next generation of great Phillies. And he was, I think, like I said, what Pete Alonso actually became for the Mets. So yeah. October 2nd, 2012, this was a multi-home run game for Darren Ruff, Trev. He played fragmented parts of five seasons for the Phillies as a power source at a time when power... or hell, even just effective big league ball players were
taking
a precious
a walk.
Commodity.
Someone needs to take a walk here. Is that Delman Young's not going to do it?
Well, Delman's not going to do it. Somebody else want to take a walk? I don't think communication was big in these locker rooms.
You don't think so?
Yeah. No.
Well, once
I don't
Ryan Sandberg
particularly
got there,
nasty.
It got big, right?
What was that?
Once Ryan Sandberg got there, it got big, right?
Oh yeah, he was a big. He would walk in and just talk to them through a bullhorn.
You love talking,
but in the locker room, yeah. He would just call Delman Young, you know, late at night, just wake him up and be like, hey, just thinking about you. You doing all right?
Just wanted
you
to hear,
buddy?
You can go to sleep. I just want to hear you breathe a little bit.
You're like, my guy.
Feel
don't
a
forget.
Distant from you.
Well, on the other side of this, what's the other thing we know sluggers do all the time, Trev?
Drink a lot of beer.
Eat a stack of flapjacks as tall as they are. That's right. Sure. But also strike out. And Ruff was slotted behind and at one point in his career platooned with Ryan Howard at first base.
Who is the exception that proves the rule about striking out, right?
We all know Howard's tendency to strike out for 8 games in a row. He has worn a golden sombrero many times in his career. How many times do you think Darren Ruff struck out 4 times in 1 game?
Good question. I'm guessing if you're asking me, the answer is 0.
Ha! On September 28th, 2013,
one, I see.
Almost a year had passed since Ruff's 2 home run game against the Nationals, and things had changed. 4th of July weekend, 2013, in Philadelphia, the cradle of America was rocking. The leader of the Philly Pops, who had the baton when the Pops were founded in 1979, was stepping down. 2 Delco women were arrested for running a fake dentist's office in Bryn Mawr.
Okay.
Where they had performed unlicensed root canals and pulled teeth.
Huh. I mean, probably cheaper than the real dentist.
Yep. Yep.
I'd do it.
I mean, cheaper. I kind of just admire their passion for dentistry. Like, clearly they could do it. So they, you know, maybe they just couldn't get the, you know, could get the paperwork in time. Maybe they were only licensed in Belize.
I wonder if they got reported because they couldn't do it. Like, it was like a real, like, Lucy and Ethel kind of thing where they were just like, let's open a dentist office. How hard could it be? And, like, you know, they're just like pulling teeth and people are going out like bleeding all over the place and being like, these dentists don't know what they're doing. And that's how they lost it. Like, if they were very effective, would they ever have been reported?
Yeah, I mean, like, not to the dental board, but to, like, the police for being just 2 women ripping teeth out of people's heads. So, yeah, probably reported,
Would you report, here's a good question. If you went to these ladies and they gave you the best dental checkup of your life, just, like, supreme service, and charged you not that much, why would you ever report them?
I would not report
that. I wouldn't. Who would report them? Just like cheap dental care.
I mean, if it were today, I'd start a GoFundMe for them.
Yeah. Can we do it now? Are they still?
Let's just do it. Let's help these women.
We just like, it's like the GoFundMe just says 2 Delco women. Listen, I don't know what their name is.
Also at this time, a South Jersey cowboy was fending off criminal charges from an animal rights group after he allegedly shocked a 9-year-old horse with a cattle prod at a rodeo, only for it to drop dead from an aneurysm 30 seconds later.
Listen, he couldn't have known that would happen.
who's to know what an electrical shock is going to do to a living, breathing organism? You know what? I'm not trained to use this thing. I'm not a dentist.
Listen, as, like, I've said many a time, I was at the taser game. I saw the guy get tased in the outfield. He dropped like a sack of potatoes. It was a little surprising, but I didn't know that electricity would do that to you. It was a new thing for me to learn.
You were there?
You
were
at that? Yeah. I was in the center field even.
I was there. I was sitting, in the 300 level above third base.
Oh, there you go. Well, that must have been when we became friends.
A man ran onto the field, dodged security for a significant amount of time, was eventually electrocuted, and during the squeals of delight from the people of Philadelphia feasting on the violence, Trev and I just kind of locked eyes from many hundreds of feet away from each other, and this podcast was born.
I turned to my wife and I said, I think I made a friend and we're going to start a podcast. And she said, what's that?
She was like, another one? Also, what is that?
But you have to go to graduate school and get a real job.
We were so stupid back then. We had no idea how much money we'd be making podcasting. We're in the money. Mariano Rivera was on his farewell tour across baseball at this point. His most recent gift being a rocking chair made out of broken bats from the Twins.
Cool.
Remember this fun period where every year we were just celebrating a different Yankees last year in baseball.
I thought all the gifts were cool.
We just like had to do it. I don't know. Someone said the writers were like, you got to do it. Yankees are great.
I feel like the time, because like, and I know this is sort of like maybe too soon, but this also happened with Kobe in the NBA. And then like that felt like fairly weird, but normal. Like, okay, everyone's going to do that. Fine, whatever. And everyone would do it with Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter, as much as it pains me. But like, when it happened with David Ortiz, I was like, I don't know, this is like, this feeling a little bit too much. Like, is every team gonna have their regional legend get like, you know, a bunch of like gifts? It seems like that was when it sort of stopped and people were like, okay, like we can give this a rest for a while.
Yeah, I think because when someone is a legend on the Red Sox or a legend on the Yankees, it's interpreted that they are national baseball legends because of the high profile nature of those teams. And that's still really obnoxious. I don't want to cheer for any Yankees.
Will Mike Trout get a bunch of gifts?
Yeah, he will. His final year will be. But like, you know, it is. Look how much we talk about him being invisible, and he's like the best. He's like a Mickey Mantle level player.
Yeah.
Like, these are the comparisons to him. Not just like, oh, what's his compared to Mookie Betts? What's he like? We're like, no, we're like the guy, the footage of the players we compared him to is in like black and white and doesn't have sound.
He's like Too Tall Johnson or whatever. The best first baseman I ever saw.
Well, the city was also beefing up security in a big way, as various events, including concerts and festivals on the Ben Franklin Parkway, were said to bring a predicted 600,000 more people to the city. Have you ever spent the 4th in Philly, Trev?
Have I? No, I've spent New Year's there. Those are the fireworks I'm thinking of. I've never been to Philadelphia for the 4th of July.
It is a great time to get out in the sun, surrounded by sweaty bodies, drinking with a koozie, drinking without a koozie, America, explosions, laying on a blanket in the grass, the shutting down of main transit arteries, Bud Light pounders for $13, loose dogs that steal your wallet and steal your identity. It's the summer you've dreamed of all summer.
And who among us doesn't remember the story of Justin Bark Clue? Well, Justin, I guess I could give you this loan.
Power of attorney? Let me think about it. Yes.
Of course you can have a biscuit, Justin.
So we were all having a great time over the summer holiday, even though the ever-present menace of two women ripping the teeth out of your mouth lurked in the background. But things weren't going great for the Phillies with the midseason approaching. By 4th of July weekend 2013, they were 40-45. Ryan Howard was limping around the clubhouse on a bum knee. John Lannon had just thrown a masterpiece.
Oh, man. I keep forgetting he was on the Phillies. Like, that's the one that won't stick for me.
The pitching staff had the worst ERA in the NL, only 2 years removed from having the best. The picture I found of John Lannon was of him sitting on the ground screaming from, I think, an injury. And Ruben Amaro hadn't fired Charlie Manuel yet because, as Phil Sheridan said in The Inquirer, that the problems would be all Ruben's fault and there'd be no one else to blame. So Charlie, at this point, you know, as is always the case, this wasn't just a Ruben and Charlie thing. It's a GM and manager thing. You know, the manager is your fire blanket.
Yeah,
you know,
right, he's exactly.
You get rid of him, and suddenly, okay, I got no moves left other than got to make things better. So here's Sheridan's summation of the roster troubles, 4th of July weekend 2013.
I'm excited to hear these.
Because at this point, there just weren't any good players on the team. Ty Wigginton and Delman Young, Chad Qualls and Chad Durbin, John Mayberry Jr. and Lance Nix. Jeez. These are the players Amaro brought in to complement the core group. If the core had remained healthy and productive, that might have been sufficient. It didn't. And that isn't.
I love the thing I love about remembering Lance Nix was how, like, he was decent on the Nationals and then just, like, less than garbage on the Phillies. And then, like, the same for Lannon. The same, like, it was like a golden age for just picking up the worst Nationals you could possibly want.
Yeah, and they didn't hold back either. Nix, he was a guy who could, you know, hit the ball 500 feet, but only once every 400 at bats.
So. Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool to watch this team get, like, a bunch of people from the Reds and Nationals and be like, maybe this will work.
Well, they finished a 10-game road trip on July 5th against the Pirates, splitting it 5-5 with a victory in Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Ryan Howard had gone 0-22 when he made it onto the field. Cole Hamels had been given an extra day of rest to get his head on straight before this start, and while the team celebrated the win, the vibe around them was that there was still a huge challenge in front of them. They were about to start a 10-game homestand with their first game against the Braves of 16 against them in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, that's a lot. Even for this year of Braves, which was not a particularly, as I recall, like, they were a good team, but it was prior to the trade, so they were still good, but like, that Braves team always seemed to somehow fall apart. It's not this current Braves team, which seems like it will be very good for a while. But who knows? It still, you did not want to play those teams at all. That was a bad sign.
No, and on July 6th, the Phillies sent Howard to the disabled list and brought up Darren Ruff.
Oh, I remember this guy. He hit 2 home runs against the Nationals.
He was hitting .266 with 7 home runs for Lehigh Valley at this point. It's fine. It was kind of at this point, it was like, all right, well, we need a first baseman. So as the month had began, talk of the future of Phillies baseball had heated up, which is to say it had sort of melted down. People were still wondering if the guys we had were going to be the guys. And that's what's so interesting, or I guess not interesting, about Darren Ruff. He came up with all these guys, and the hope was that this was a new generation. But I don't know how strongly any of us actually believed that. And we can see now that should the Phillies be competitive again soon, it will be from the generation that followed this one, or at least fragments of even that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe 2 generations. Because look at these names from a Sam Donnellan column in the Daily News.
Oh, no.
About the future of this franchise. And what, like, people in the actual media were like, well, this has to be the future because these are the guys who are here, who came through the farm system and who are young. None of them have been good, but they're here. So he was asking, are Michael Franco, Cesar Hernandez, Freddie Galvis, Darren Ruff, Ethan Martin, and Jesse Biddle future stars? Or are they equivalent to players such as Kevin Sefcik, Marlon Anderson, and Bobby Estolela? The anticipation of their careers exceeding the actuality of them.
I mean, so Marlon Anderson's fair. I think it's kind of unfair to call Cesar Hernandez Kevin Sefcik.
Yeah, Sefcik was, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was like a career bench guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, these are not good players. Like, I mean, even Marlon Anderson was not a good player. It's fine. But you're not talking about Marlon Byrd, the 2 Marlins, right? Like, there's 1 good Marlon and 1 bad Marlon.
And then there's the Marlins.
They're all bad Marlins.
There's a lot of bad Marlins.
But I mean, I guess out of that group, Cesar Hernandez is the only one you actually want on your roster. The rest are, I mean, I guess Freddie Galvis had his time as a defensive specialist.
Yeah, and you know, Michael Franco would give you a solid weekend once in a while.
And it looks like Jesse Biddle's going to have a nice career as a bullpen guy. Nice.
And then he got hit by a giant piece of hail.
Yeah, and had, like, Lyme disease. Another person had leukemia. It's awful.
Just bizarre, yeah. So on July 6th, 2013, Darren Ruff didn't really make the difference. The Phillies lost to the Braves 13-4, though Ruff had entered the game in the 8th and logged a hit on the day in his first month with the team.
Okay.
He'd play in 24 games and hit .309 with 11 extra base hits and 4 home runs, slugging .543, and being worth 168 weighted runs created. So
that's
by 20, yeah, by September, yeah, it's a short sample size, but by September 28th, the day of another singular achievement in his MLB career, he was hitting .247 with 14 home runs, slugging .458, and was worth 125 weighted runs created. So he was striking out in 31.1% of his at-bats. I think it's fair to say the league had figured Darren Ruff out.
Yeah. I mean, this is typically like what you worry about when you sign someone like Darren Ruff after they've like done really well in Korea. Because it's like, well, did they learn something, or is it just going to be this again? And I think, like, actually, I have a lot of hope for him because, you know, it was a lot different when like Eric Thames came back. I mean, Eric Thames is the example, and everyone was like, well, he'll stop being good in a minute, and he hasn't. He's still like a valuable player, so like, I don't know, Darren Ruff could be that.
There was footage today from the Kansas City Royals account of Michael Franco taking some batting practice in a batting cage. And, you know, people started with their, like, oh, he's going to have a monster season for the Royals. I can just feel it. But I don't know, man. I think maybe Darren Ruff is the dark horse ex-Philly given up on prospect who's going to come back and haunt the Phillies this year.
It might be. I mean, I think like I think likely neither of them will. And I know that's like a boring answer.
I agree. Darren Ruff's on a minor league contract.
Like, I also think like Michael Franco, I don't know. Like it feels like everyone getting upset over, what's his name from the Sixers? I'm not remembering why am I forgetting his name? Not Nerlens Noel. Hang on. It's because my stupid cat's in the background. Hold on 1 second. That awful meowing is now out of here. And it's Markelle Fultz. It's like Markelle Fultz. Like there's no chance Markelle Franco would have, if he becomes like, you know, Mike Moustakas too or something, there's no chance it would have happened in Philadelphia. Like and it's not because it's a Philadelphia thing. It's just like he needed a change of scenery. Like there are people who just need that. I don't think he's going to have a great year, though. I hope both of them do. I agree with you, though. Darren Ruff is the one that is more likely to. And that maybe is like a dumb thing to think, since Michael Franco had like an okay year against, like, I mean, bad, but like as a bench bat, fine. And like Darren Ruff hasn't even proved he could do that. But like, I don't know. It just feels more likely.
If Darren Ruff had joined the Phillies, was a consistent 250, 260 batting average guy, slugged 450 and was good for 20, 25 home runs, he's sticking around, right?
Yep.
Especially at this point in Phillies history.
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, on September 28th, he struck out looking in the first inning with two runners on. Top of the third, struck out looking.
Not good.
Worked a walk in the fifth, struck out swinging in the seventh to give a rally a second out, and struck out swinging to end the eighth. The Phillies, who had Casper Wells and John Mayberry and Cody Ashe in their lineup that day as well, worked hard to lose this one.
The Casper Wells-John Mayberry era.
Jonathan Papelbon surrendered a three-run bomb to Justin Upton in ninth. But the Braves could come all the way back, and the Phillies hung on to win. The Braves couldn't come all the way back, and the Phillies hung on to win 5-4 in a meaningless victory that saw the first and only golden sombrero of Darren Ruff's MLB career.
Terrible.
He wound up having his job taken in the years that followed by Tommy Joseph, whose story was pretty similar to Ruff's and ended in about the same way. And then Ruff and Darnell Sweeney were traded to the Dodgers for Howie Sweeney. Kendrick.
There's another guy I totally forgot about.
Totally forgot about him.
Now I'm remembering him, but like... Boy, that is not a name I've thought of in a long time.
They packaged him with Darren Ruff for Howie Kendrick in 2016, and then Ruff headed off to Korea in 2017 to slug for the Samsung Lions of the KBO. 1 year later, the Lions held Darren Ruff Day at Daegu Samsung Lions Park. The highlight was his son, Henry, running around the field and laughing with some of the most pure joy you will ever see.
Oh, that's nice.
The fans loved Darren Ruff. The players loved his son. They were playing with his son when he was running around. His son threw out the first pitch to his dad and did a little bow of respect, like what they do traditionally. The Lions made a video montage of Ruff, which was like, I want to say straightforward. They showed a little of his time with the Phillies. Yeah, like they showed some of his time with the Phillies when he was not doing so hot, his initial struggles in Korea, and his ultimate success with the team. He made a jumping catch to rob somebody of a home run in the outfield. He finished KBO career hitting .313 with a .973 OPS, 86 home runs. And he was even 13-for-21 in stolen bases. One fan had a sign that read, "Ruff, stay with SL. Do not go to Japan. It's too dangerous," with little atomic symbols.
Man, I don't know why you wouldn't. I get it. Like, you probably want to. Probably, like, he wants to be back in America. Sure. But, like, man, it must be so cool to, like, you know, you have that experience of, like, man, this is so hard for me. Like, I'm just, like, I can't put it together. I can't hit like I know I can. And you just, like, put it together, and you are a hero to, like, a seriously passionate league of people. I don't know why you wouldn't stay, man.
I agree. You know, if I were him, you know, I mean, hey, look, who the hell knows why he decided to come back? Like, that's, you know, that's like you said, he probably wants to be in America. He probably wants to be in the country he's from, be closer to family, you know,
not me.
All that stuff. Like, it makes total sense.
I mean, I'd be cool to be in the country.
But I'm glad he got to have that experience. Like, you're a ball player. Obviously, you want to reach the top of your sport. You want to be good. You want to do your job really well. And mm-hmm. that could be the case.
It's just like ambition, right? Like, that's what drives a lot of these guys.
He didn't get to do that. It didn't work out for him in Major League Baseball, and he had this opportunity. And it was such a good... It was such a good fit for him. Mm-hmm. And it was just really cool to see. And I love that video of Darren Ruff Day. Like, yeah. That's so cool. And not every player gets that. So it's great to see guys take opportunities like that overseas and really thrive.
Yeah. I hope it works out for him. And this is the last thing I'll say, and then I'll let you wrap up. Like, I hope it works out for him in San Francisco. Cause I mean, like, guys like Ruff and to a lesser degree, Franco, like, these are guys who, you know, ultimately the sad thing about the Phillies, the one bad thing about the Phillies being like slightly better now, I'm not, you know, I don't want to be optimistic necessarily, but like, you know, they do have Bryce Harper and Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola. Like, there's a lot of bright spots on the team, but like, it is like, I don't know, like, you're not going to sign someone like Ruff, or you're not going to get to sign someone like Ruff, because you can't promise him playing time. And so like these kind of like diamonds in the rough, players. I was saying it, and then I realized it would sound like I meant the pun unless I owned it. But like, you know, these players who are just like, maybe they will put it together. They aren't really a fit for the Phillies of the moment, and that's a bummer when they're homegrown guys. But I don't know. It doesn't hurt if he's good for the Giants. It's fine.
No. And now Darren Ruff has this minor league deal with the Giants, who he's very, very 2020 Giants. And the thing is, this is still Phillies news. Mm-hmm. Blogs ate this up, Phillies blogs, because Ruff, despite never playing even like a full season with the Phillies, the most he ever played was 106 games, and he only made it into over 100 games that one time. And was never a huge impact player for them, but it was still Phillies news that he was signed by another team all these years later. Yeah. Because people remember him.
He's more of a Philly than a lot of those transient players in that time. Like, mm-hmm. I don't mean anything against Arnold Sweeney. I don't think there was any like problem with him necessarily. It's just like, you know, I mean, he just like, I don't think of Darnell Sweeney as a Philly. I don't think of, you know, Casper Wells as a Philly. Like, not that they, like, Ruff had a more significant role, but like, I don't even think, like, if some team signed John Mayberry, I wouldn't be like, oh, darn, like, John Mayberry's still playing and he's not with the Phillies. Like, Darren Ruff felt like he was actually like a Philly.
Yeah. I mean, it does. It kind of makes you look back on all these sluggers we kind of got ourselves worked up over. And Cody Ashey, who I think a lot of people liked because he was from Nebraska, like Richie Ashburn, and because he was replacing Michael Young at third and could actually move to the ball. Or Tommy Joseph, who was such a great story, we thought the narrative would pull him through to the other side all on its own. Or even Rhys Hoskins, who came up like much like Darren Ruff and made such a big scene with the home runs early in his career and still, like we said, has something to prove. So it kind of shows you how one thing gets misaligned mentally or physically. Suddenly a slugger's job gets so much harder. So, point is, Darren Ruff is back, sort of.
Yeah.
And the chance of a big league comeback, the chance of a big league comeback is on the table. And maybe, just maybe, Trev, out in San Francisco this summer, we'll hear a clap of Nebraskan thunder. Was that your cat?
No, it's me.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Damn it.
Well, folks, thanks for listening to this Darren Ruff-themed episode of The Dirty Inning. As always, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, Continued Success with myself and Liz Rocher, and this podcast, The Dirty Inning, with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We also have a very, very intense Patreon presence, patreon.com/hittandseason, for all kinds of extra Phillies bonus content. John Stolness likes to throw up baseball card material he puts up on there. Liz and I will do movie reviews. We recently reviewed the movie Screwball, the documentary on Netflix about baseball's steroid scandal and how friggin' sleazy it was. Also, you can hear me and Chris Jones talk about, you know, baseball with his muzzle off, which I think is how he prefers it. We had him on Hittin' Season the other night, Trev, mm-hmm. when John Stolness wasn't around, and I had to go back and bleep 22 times.
Wow. All right. Well, good. I'm glad Chris is thriving.
But yeah, don't forget to be a part of all that. We have a lot of fun, and baseball season is just about upon us. So we look forward to bringing you all this crap.
As the
gray, misting winter hellscape finally lifts. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on The Dirty
Inning. Goodbye.